Robert Joe was already up there. And so he called and said, "Can you take the class tomorrow night?" And I told you before, that's kind of normal. I expect the last minute thing. I knew they were going out of town, but he hadn't said anything to me. And so anyway, like I said, it wasn't really a surprise. I'd already thought about something. He did ask me if I would study from Matthew chapter 24. And if you will turn to Matthew 24, I actually want to back up into chapter 23. And I will have to go quickly through this, and I would like to finish all of it. If you have a question, it will need to be very brief. And there will be some things that I will have to kind of skim over. But I began looking at this context probably 27, 28 years ago, trying to figure out better how it all lined up. And I know at least part of this, most people think, is Christ's final coming. I do not think that. I don't think it could fit in this context. I think all of this must be about the destruction of Jerusalem. And there's some simple points in here that when we discuss them, I think you'll be able to see that too. And I guess one of my problems over a lot of the last years of preaching to me, too many times we just accept what has always been taught. We don't look into it ourselves. And preachers, let me tell you, preachers are very guilty of that. They'll pick up somebody else's sermon and says, "That sounds good, and I'll just preach that." And don't really look into things sometimes. So I'm going to have to skim over some of it. And I would like to try and get through all of it if possible. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to talk to you later on this. And we would actually begin in chapter 23, the last part of it. And if you're there, verse 18 on down through verse 30. Jesus 8 times pronounces a condemnation, a woe, to the scribes and Pharisees. 7 times he calls them hypocrites. And I think this is important, that these were hypocrites, and Jesus is going to be looking at those who are hypocrites also. As we would come on down after that, he tells them, verse 32, to fill up the measure of the guilt of your fathers. Old Testament figurative language, prophetic language, is something that we need to know if we're going to understand something in the New Testament. There are times in the Old Testament that God says, "The cup of my wrath is filled up." And what that means, it's time for judgment. And that's what Jesus is telling them here. Fill up the measure of the guilt of your fathers. God's judgment is coming to you. He calls them serpents, verse 33. They were brood of vipers. You know, sometimes people say Jesus was never offensive to anybody. You think this would have been offensive?
Oh, yes.
All right. So we do understand that. And sometimes this would be necessary. And he says, how will you escape the sentence of hell? The Greek word here is Gehenna. And again, it means the place of eternal punishment. Jesus says, verse 34, I am sending you prophets, wise men, scribes. You'll kill some, crucify them. You'll scourge them in your synagogues. And notice Jesus says, I am sending. And something important we've kind of mentioned before is Jesus says in Matthew 28, verse 18, that he has been given all power in heaven and in earth. It is his kingdom. He is the one that is in control of all of these things. And he says, I am sending these. In verse 35, that he says, that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth. And again, on them was going to be this punishment. And then verse 36, an important part. Truly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. The word used here in the Greek is genea. Genea means not a race of people, but a group of people all living at the same time. We know what a generation is today. This is what it means. Usually a generation was about 40 years. And I think that's the way that the Lord is using it here on this generation. Verse 37, quickly he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets, stones those who are sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together. And again, he is God. I would have gathered your children together. Protect them as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. Verse 38, behold, your house is being left to you desolate. What would be their house? The temple. This is no longer God's house. The last time the presence of God was ever in the temple was Jesus right here when he leaves. And I believe the Ark of the Covenant was destroyed and taken to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar in the destruction of Jerusalem. It's interesting, Jeremiah says, Jeremiah 3, verse 16, about the Ark of the Covenant, that it will not come to mind and it will not be made again. To me, that indicates it was done away with. So that Ark of the Covenant hadn't been in the temple in over 500 years. Verse 39, I say to you, from now on you will not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And the idea again, until you acknowledge who I am, you will not see me or you will not know me. In Mark and Luke at this point, they both record about the poor widow woman putting in her two copper coins or two mites into the treasury. And again, they were in the temple. In verse 1 of chapter 24, Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. Why do you think they would have done that? Jesus said, your house is being left to you desolate. They come out and says, look how beautiful this is. Herod the Great had begun refurbishing this temple in about 20 or 19 B.C. The roof was plated with gold. Josephus says it was like one of the seven wonders of the world and how beautiful it was. So the disciples came out and pointed this out. And he said to them, do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down. This was simply an amazing prophecy. This whole temple, that every stone would be moved. Josephus said the foundation stones for the temple were, in our understanding, 12 feet by 18 feet by 39 feet. And that's taller than this ceiling. It's a little more than half the wide, the width of this building, and about the length of this building. Those were the foundation stones. So how great would it be for Jesus to say, not one stone will be left upon another? This was completely fulfilled. Probably what took place when the temple was burned, the gold from the roof went down into the cracks. And as it did, they literally moved every stone to get every part of the gold out of there. Verse 3 is, he was sitting on Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him quietly saying, tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Now, I think basically this is one question. Sometimes they try to divide it up into three. But it's just really one thing that they are asking. One thing we can see in Mark, that this is Peter, Andrew, James, and John that asked the Lord privately about this. And some would say the sign of his coming would be the end of the world. Disciples had no concept of that. They didn't even have a concept really of his kingdom. In Acts chapter 1, we can see there they asked the question, verse 7, Lord, is it at this time you're restoring the kingdom to Israel? This was their greatest concept. They had no concept of him going away and coming again. He hadn't even told them that. And the end of that question, the end of the age, is the proper rendering. Greek word that is used here is aeon. The common word for world is cosmos. And so the question is about the end of the age. This would be the Jewish age, the Jewish society, the Jewish culture. And that really was going to end with the destruction of the temple. Verse 4, I'm going to just skim from there on down really to verse 8. Jesus tells them, don't let anyone mislead you. Many will come in my name. You'll hear of wars, rumors of wars. This is something people talk about today. All the terrible wars, these are signs of Christ's final coming. No. There will not be any signs of Christ's final coming. He'll come as a thief in the night. That's something we should easily understand. Nation will rise against nation. Verse 8, all of these things are merely the beginning of birth pains. There's going to be a change. Going from the Jewish society and culture to the kingdom, the spiritual kingdom. And this, again, is the beginning of these things. He tells in verse 9, they'll deliver you to tribulation, kill you, you'll be hated. Many will fall away, there'll be many false prophets arise. Verse 11, lawlessness is increased. Verse 13, the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. Again, I think this is looking at a physical salvation, escaping from Jerusalem. In verse 14, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. And Paul writes in Colossians 1, verse 23, that the gospel had gone to every creature for all creation. And that was written about 60 or 61 A.D. So again, we understand that this had taken place. And then he points out this is when the end would come. And this is the end, as he said, really of the Jewish society. Verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of in Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. This is a prophecy from Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27. The idea of the abomination of desolation in the holy place, this would be in the temple. These would be sacrifices that would be offered for things that would be done that would be an abomination. The Jews understood this very well. There was a man by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes, that he was the ruler of the Seleucid Empire. In 165 B.C., he came in, conquered Israel, and made these kind of sacrifices so they would understand what this was going to be. But he's saying, when you see this, this they would know. Now, let me turn over to, I only want to use a couple of other passages. In Luke chapter 21, this is the same occasion that Jesus is speaking here. And in Luke 21 and verse 20, he says, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is near. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. This is exactly the same place in what Jesus is saying that Matthew records. In verse 16, he says, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. But again, very simply here, this is not to any of us today. This is to Judea. It's to the Jewish Christians living in Jerusalem. You need to get out of here. And they understood this prophecy previous to this time, and they left. There was not a Christian that was in Jerusalem when it was destroyed. There were 1,100,000 Jews that were killed, according to Josephus, and 97,000 that were captured. This was a horrific thing.
In Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. dreams that were swallowed in their gold and trying to escape. And the Romans found out about this. And what do you think they did? They cut it open. So again, this was a terrible part of what was going to happen to Jerusalem. Let me go on. Verse 16, again, those who are in Judea, flee to the mountains. Whoever's on the housetop must not come down to get the things that are in the house. Whoever's in the field must not come back to get his coat. If they're on the housetop, housetops were level housetops. There was usually an outside staircase as well as an inside. If you're on the rooftop, escape. You can't go back down into the house. Don't go back to get your cloak if you're in the field. Woe to those who are pregnant, and in those days who are nursing babies. You're going to have to escape physically. This could not possibly be about Jesus' final coming. No one's going to run away from it. There's nothing that's going to occur in that way. Pray that your flight will not be in the winter. Winter is the time of rain in Israel. This is when any kind of travel would be very difficult. Also, on the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, the doors were usually, or the gates were usually closed. As they were again, it would be very hard to escape. And he says, then there will be a great tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. Unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been spared, but for the sake of the elect, those days would be cut short. For the sake of the elect, for the sake of Christians who had loved ones, in Jerusalem, there was life that was saved. And again, this is the Lord's prophecy. Verse 23, behold, some will say, here is the Christ, there he is. Don't believe them, they'll be false prophets. Verse 25, behold, I have told you in advance. I'm telling you this so you will know, so you will get out of here. What happened as the Roman armies, legions, were actually coming in. There were three legions that came against Jerusalem. As they did, people that were in the countryside, they fled to the city because that's where protection would be, the walls. And yet as they fled to the city, this is the very place the Romans were going to put up a siege against and again bring them down. So Jesus is telling them in advance. If they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, do not go out. Verse 27, for just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. The word coming here is the Greek word parousia. And there are some that try to make this word basically that Jesus would be seen. That as his coming, that he would be seen. It very simply means his presence. And an example of that, Isaiah chapter 19 and verse 1. I will turn it over there. But in a punishment to Egypt, it says that the Lord is coming on a cloud, and he's going to punish the gods of Egypt. This was a normal way of explaining a physical punishment coming on a nation. And again, this is really the same thing that's being used here. The coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures or the eagles will gather. And the corpse is going to be Jerusalem and the Jews. The eagles are going to be the Romans. Something is made out of the idea of the eagles here, again, that it was a insignia of the Roman guards, of the Roman legion. It possibly could have referred to that. Eagles do not eat dead bodies, though. But this is something that vultures would do. So again, there's two different thoughts there. Verse 29 on through 31. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky. And the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Again, this is figurative, prophetic language. Find this in the Old Testament. Joel chapter 1, Joel chapter 2, both of these, verse 28 through 32 of Joel chapter 2. Again, the same thing, the sun and the moon. Basically, this is the powers that be. The things, the ones that are in control, these are going to fall. Their power is going to be taken away. We mentioned a few Sundays ago, Luke chapter 10, verse 18. Jesus says, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. All right, Satan didn't literally fall from heaven. This was looking at Satan's power being reduced as his disciples were casting out demons. So again, these that are in control, they will fall. The powers of the heavens will be shaken. And again, not the dwelling place of God, but as we say, the powers that be. The sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. Then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And again, coming on the clouds of the sky, his coming again, his presence. One other thing that I will mention that I already mentioned back in Luke 21, Jesus said, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that a desolation is near. They were going to see this. If you're living in Jerusalem and you were looking to the north and to the northwest of Jerusalem, the hills are higher than the walls of the city. You could actually stand in the city and be able to see these things. And I think this is probably the sign of the Son of Man. This is his coming. He's coming through the Roman armies. Now again, you can go back to the Old Testament. And the Assyrian army, as it came, or the Babylonian army, as it came, this was God coming in judgment to them. Same thing here. This is Jesus coming in judgment against Jerusalem by the Roman armies. Verse 31 is interesting. He will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. One of the manuscripts also point out with a voice and a trumpet. I think this really, again, is very simple. It's the gospel. The gospel that has been preached, the messengers, angels, that they have been sent forth with the gospel. The gospel will be heard. His elect will be gathered. And again, they will not be in Jerusalem. They will have left and gone to the area of Perea. And there's where the Christians went. And none of them, again, suffered from this destruction. Verse 32. Again, a very simple thing, really. Now, learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know the summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near right at the door. Again, when Christ comes, it's going to be him coming as a thief in the night. There's not any signs. People are not going to see things. Jesus tells them, when you see these things, then you know that he is near. Verse 34 should help everyone understand all the things he said previously. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Generation, again, is 30 or 40 years. Jesus says all of these things will take place. All of the things that he's talking about will take place in this generation. What I find truly interesting, Jesus made this prophecy in 30 AD. 40 years later, it's fulfilled in AD 70 at the destruction of Jerusalem. So in a sense, exactly 40 years as far as a generation. One way that 40 years is arrived at is if you go back and look at the judgment. And again, so many times if you read the book of Judges, you'll find the judges ruled for 40 years, or that Israel had peace for 40 years. And again, that was a generation. So Jesus, again, makes this very plain, that will not pass away. I believe heaven and earth here is very similar to what we've already mentioned as far as the powers that be. I connect this with a passage in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 18. In Matthew 5 and verse 18, Jesus says there, "For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until it is all accomplished or fulfilled." When was all of the law going to be accomplished and fulfilled?
The crucifixion.
All right. Well, no, it was going to go after that. There's portions of the Old Testament that point out about the destruction of Jerusalem. This is when it would all be completely fulfilled. Everything in the Old Testament was fulfilled finally at the destruction of Jerusalem. And this is really what Jesus is saying. That truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke will pass from the law. Jesus said he came to fulfill the law, and he did, his part. And it was completely fulfilled in the destruction of Jerusalem. All right, if we go on, let me show you a couple of others. I don't have much time. I may be going way too fast or too slow. How much time have I got?
About 8 minutes.
All right, I'm going to have to hurry on here. And I know I've gone through this fast. I hope you got something from it. Verse 36, he says, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone." Some thoughts on this. One, the Son is still on the earth. This is something that has probably not been revealed yet. If he knew when this was taking place, he would have had a great desire to tell his disciples. This is the day and the hour. But he didn't know. And it says really that only the Father does alone. And it's possible it may not have been decided of the day and hour yet. The coming of the Son of Man will be like in the days of Noah. As in those days before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. They did not understand until the flood came, took them all away. So will the coming, and again, parousia of the Son of Man, his presence. He's looking at Noah and how quickly the flood came upon him. Now, verse 40 presents a difficulty to those that think this has to do with Christ's final coming. "Then there will be two men in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left." If this is Christ's final coming, and the one that is taken up with him, then where are the others going to be left on this earth? Right. All right. And again, this is the teaching of the rapture. And the rapture, again, is a very false doctrine. All right, this is a difficulty in thinking that this is Christ's final coming. That one will be taken, one will be taken. When the Roman armies came in, they said there were three Roman legions. And as these legions came in to the area and came into Jerusalem, again, they built the siege wall. They broke in from the north side of Jerusalem, the third wall, the last one that had been put up. They broke into that. They then shortly broke into the second wall, which was north of the temple. The Jews fought back and broke them out for 5 days, but the Romans again conquered the area. And again, as they came in, it was going to be very quickly. So this is a difficulty. At least it would be to me. One is taken, one is left. And again, one is not going to be left on earth when Christ comes. Verse 42 on through verse 51, very quickly. He says, "Therefore be on the alert. You do not know which day your Lord is coming." And he goes on to point out, if the good man of the house, head of the house, would have known when he was coming, that he would have not allowed his house to be broken into. You must be ready. Verse 45 is looking at the faithful and sensible slave that's been in charge of his household. And I think this household would be the Lord's church. Blessed is the slave whom the master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. Is this in the future? The faithful slave is going to be in charge of all of the Lord's possessions in heaven? No. This is looking at him being prepared for the destruction of Jerusalem. And then as being a leader, one faithful in the kingdom, that he will be over the Lord's possessions, which is his church and his people. And if you continue then, it looks at the evil slave, says his heart, my master is not coming for a long time, beats his fellow slaves, eats, drinks, and drunkards. Master, that slave will come in a day when he does not expect, an hour when he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Verse 1 of chapter 25, I think, gives us something else. If the last part of chapter 24 is Christ's final coming, Christ has come in his finality. Chapter 25 begins, then the kingdom of heaven will be compared to 10 virgins. After Christ's final coming, will this be a true parable? No. After the destruction of Jerusalem, yes. Then everyone must be prepared, as the five prudent or wise virgins would be. And this is exactly what the Lord's teaching was. So again, I hope this has been profitable. I know I went through it very quickly. Maybe you got some thoughts on it. I told Norm this usually takes me 4 or 5 lessons to do this. And as I said, I began teaching from Matthew in about 1991, going through the book. And as I got to this chapter, I thought, well, I'm going to have to figure this out, how it all makes sense. And you put it with the other scriptures. And this is the only way it makes sense to me. Now, if you don't agree with me, that's all right. I hope that you will continue to study and look at some of these things. Again, in their context, a problem I have with too many people is they take things out of context and make it mean what they want to mean. So, my time's up, right? From past?
You got a minute left.
I got a minute.
So, can I ask you a question? So, 37, 39, 42, 44, 46, when it refers to the coming of the Son of Man, this is just a figurative way of saying judgment.
It is judgment. It's his presence. The word used there is parousia, used throughout this. Same thing as
could
God.
Could parousia also include his physical coming as well?
It can. It can. But we look at the Old Testament and we see the same thing. The Lord was coming many, many times. And that coming